With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi there, and welcome again to the Explaining History podcast. And today I'm going to talk about the involvement that the Ottoman Empire has in the July crisis of 1914, just at the commencement of the First World War. The Ottoman Empire had faced crises in 1908 with the first Bosnian crisis, 1908 to 1909, the Italian invasion of Libya and Ottoman territory in 1911 to 1912, and the Balkan Wars of 1912 to 13. So over roughly a kind of a 5-year period, there had been virtually non-stop crises and setbacks for the Ottoman Empire. The historian Sean McMeekin calls this the kind of the period of the jackals pouncing, as it suddenly appears that the Ottoman Empire has become enfeebled beyond survival. And the thing that the July crisis prevents is the possibility of a third Balkan War, one which was developing at pace in June 1914, between Greece and the Ottoman Empire, that could well have broken out. The Sarajevo assassination of Archduke Franz Ferdinand that takes place on June the 28th, 1914, just manages to prevent the war between Greece and the Ottoman Empire from emerging. And it meant that this sort of countdown to crisis meant that all other foreign policy considerations and debates would suddenly be kind of completely overwhelmed by the spectre of what could happen. But of course, the Ottoman Empire wasn't absent from the proceedings and discussions that took place, and the frantic diplomacy that took place in the run-up to the First World War. The Ottoman question was a key bone of contention and discussion between the great powers, and it was an object of great interest in Berlin and in St. Petersburg. On the 30th of June, 2 days after the assassination, Russia's foreign minister demanded up-to-date information from Russia's naval ministry regarding the war readiness of Russia's Black Sea Fleet. It wasn't any other consideration in the Black Sea other than the possibility of war with the Ottoman Empire. There was nobody else to fight. The Foreign Minister Sazonov had sat on a committee in February 1914 on which Russia's military service chiefs so that they would speed up planning for the arrival of amphibious troops, which could be dispatched to Constantinople, which would be roughly about 30,000 soldiers, and that would be done right from the beginning of any hostilities. Why was this sort of discussion happening? Well, firstly, it was assumed by the Russians that the Ottomans would be a loyal ally of Germany. The Kaiser and his diplomats had gone to great lengths to cultivate Ottoman loyalty in the 1890s and the 1900s. But also, there were historic opportunities to be had as far as the Romanov dynasty were concerned in any war against the Ottoman Empire. But what those opportunities are, we'll come to in a little while. Sazonov, the foreign minister, recalled in his memoirs that the reason for urgency was that everyone present considered an offensive against Constantinople inevitable should a European war break out. So it was assumed that the Turks would take one side or another, probably that of the Germans. On the 15th of June 1914, tensions between the Ottoman Empire and Greece were at their height. Sazonov was warned that Russia must be prepared to launch immediate countermeasures to seize the straits, the Dardanelles, if a third Balkan war broke out. Previously, the threat of the seizure of the Dardanelles had caused by Italy during the Italo-Ottoman War and the invasion of Libya had caused the Russians immense anxiety, the Dardanelles being their only waterway that would not freeze over in winter, their only access to warm water ports. So after the assassination of Sarajevo, when it appeared that there would be a general European war emerging, more than simply just a Balkan war, the Russians thought that urgent planning was necessary, and in a very secret and urgent request, it was asked whether Russian troops could be put ashore at the Bosphorus within 4 or 5 days of the outbreak of any hostilities. So that would have been a mobilisation far faster than anything that was achieved against Germany. So what does that tell us? Well, it tells us that the Russians considered the Bosphorus and the Dardanelles to be the most important theatre of war, and that if the Ottoman Empire joined with Germany and managed to seize the Dardanelles, then that would strangle Russia and cause Russia immense strategic and economic difficulties. Germany, by July, was becoming increasingly diplomatically isolated. It had really Austria as its sole partner, and a hidden, well, not so well hidden, but a tacit understanding with the Sublime Porte, the government of the Ottoman Empire. The relationship with the Porte becomes more and more important as the extent of Germany's isolation in the July crisis becomes clear. On Friday, July the 24th, which was one day after Austria-Hungary had sent her ultimatum to the Serbs, the Kaiser Wilhelm II told his ambassador in Constantinople, Wagenheim, to open a direct alliance talks with the Ottoman Empire. And this would have, as we know, profound implications for the rest of the 20th century. Not only would German assistance to the Ottoman Empire help the Ottoman Empire to actually inflict some quite bruising defeats on the Allies during the war, but the final fall of the Ottoman Empire created the structure of the modern Middle East as we understand it, and the role of Britain and France, and later the USA, in the modern Middle East from the 1920s onwards. And one factor more than anything else encouraged the Kaiser and his Chancellor Bethmann Hollweg to see Germany as isolated under threat, and that was the tendency of the British throughout the July crisis to become move closer and closer to the threat of war, which obviously only is only declared when Germany invades Belgium. On the day of August the 1st, Saturday, August the 1st, the ultimatum that Germany had given to Russia to stop mobilising expires, and Germany and Russia are at war. At that moment, there's increasing desperation, and the promise, and it's quite a loose promise that the Ottomans give, that their armies will be battle-ready, is enough to get the Germans simply to shake hands on an alliance. The Russians were getting themselves ready for war with Turkey, as we know, and they thought this would follow automatically after the outbreak of war in Europe, as it would be simply the part of the same conflict. On July the 22nd, which is 2 days after Serbia rejected the ultimatum given by Vienna, but a day before Austria-Hungary declared war on Serbia, Russia's chief of army staff, a guy called N.N. Yanushkevich, gave top secret orders to General Yudenich, who was the chief of staff of Russia's Caucasian army in Georgia. And these orders were simply mobilise against Turkey and the Ottoman Empire. On the same day, Sazonov was given a memorandum, Sazonov being Russia's foreign minister, which said that if Russia was to back down against the Austro-Germans in Europe, it would then send a message of dangerous weakness to Constantinople. And this dangerous weakness would say, essentially, that a war would not necessarily be prevented against between Russia and Constantinople, but it would actually aid Constantinople to wage war against Russia more effectively, because Russia would appear to be hesitant and uncertain. So the war in Europe against Austria and Germany is seen as something that that Russia shouldn't back out of, because it would give a green light to the Turks to attack. On the 29th of July, just as this hesitation is happening, Nicholas II is about to make the kind of the fateful decision of his life. And is rather hoping that he can more fight just Austria and not Germany as well. Yanushkevich basically tells Yudenich that even if there is no war in Europe, that the war against the Ottoman Empire should carry on. And if there is a war in Europe and the Ottoman Empire chooses not to become involved, then the mobilisation against the Ottoman Empire should happen anyway. So there should be some sort of preemptive strike. So no matter what, the set of combinations, there should be war against the Ottoman.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalised plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah. What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
An empire. It was at this point that Sazonov, through his ambassador in London, Count Beckendorf, told the British in no uncertain terms that the planned sale of dreadnought battleships that had been built for the Ottoman Empire needed to be cancelled. The last thing that the Russian Black Sea fleet wanted was two British dreadnoughts patrolling the Black Sea and taking on their far weaker warships. Churchill, as First Lord of the Admiralty, eventually obliged in this and ordered the now illegal seizure of the Ottoman ships that had been built for the Ottoman Empire by British shipyards, and British sailors stormed the ships, commandeered them before Ottoman flags could be raised. This led almost directly to the decision by the Ottoman Empire to sign a secret defence treaty with the German Empire that would be valid until December 31st, 1918. And the treaty promised Turkey, promised that Turkey would join Germany if the latter went to war with Russia on behalf of Austria-Hungary. And this meant, this was an interesting wording, because very rarely do alliances get created where one party commits themselves to war in a set of circumstances that are almost certain to happen. The only reason for doing this is if you believe that you are eventually going to get at least as good a part of the deal, if not slightly better. And the bit that the Ottomans were particularly interested in was that Germany would obligate itself by force of arms, if need be, to defend Ottoman territory in case it should be threatened. And indeed, it was threatened. One of the first requests that the Ottomans make is the deployment of the German Mediterranean fleet to Constantinople. The SMS Goeben, the German battlecruiser, and a support cruiser, the Breslau, would go to Constantinople, and this would enable, in the words of Wangenheim, the emissary to Constantinople, that with the Goeben, even an Ottoman landing on Russian territory would be possible. By this point, because of the necessity of speed in German mobilisation plans, by Monday, August the 3rd, the German army is desperate to start its offensive in the west. Any time that is wasted is a step towards possible defeat. And this haste ensures that the Ottomans tend to get the better part of the deal. There are all sorts of get-out clauses that mean that the Ottomans could potentially avoid actually having to take the Russians on. Ultimately, this isn't what happens because the Russians attack the Ottomans. But the speed at which the events take place mean that the Germans wind up giving more to the agreement than they get out of it, certainly. The state when war had been declared between France and Germany, and which was confirmed on Monday, the 3rd of August, it was very it was imperative that a safe harbour be found very quickly for the Goeben and the Breslau, because if the British Mediterranean fleet tracked them down, they would be able to easily sink them. So the Goeben and the Breslau went to Constantinople as a result. The arrival of the Goeben, a dreadnought class ship, into Constantinople sent shivers down the Black Sea fleets, the officers of the Russian Black Sea fleet. The reason for this, much as the reason for not wanting two British dreadnoughts handed over to the Ottomans, was that a dreadnought's armour and gunnery and speed could eliminate any potential rival. Any ship that wasn't a dreadnought ship really stood very little chance in open sea battle with a dreadnought class ship. So this was, you know, essentially turning up with a gun to a knife fight. And it meant that Russia's mobilisation plans of seizing the Bosphorus would be thrown into absolute chaos. There is no way that an invasion fleet could withstand an attack from a dreadnought class ship. The Goeben and the Breslau, in a race across the Mediterranean to make it to Constantinople on the in the days just prior to Britain's declaration of war, and then shortly afterwards, were in a very dangerous position. They were able to stop at a coaling station in Brindisi, in Italy, where they couldn't take on quite enough coal. And getting to Constantinople was not a given, as the British Mediterranean fleet and its immense power was likely to bear down on the two ships at any moment. And this gave the Ottomans great leverage over the Germans. The Sublime Porte essentially say to the Germans that if you want your ships to dock with us, and this is somebody talking to an ally, bear in mind, not a non-allied power, if you want your ships to dock with us, then we will insist that you support our demands when the war is successfully won for recovery of parts of Greece, the Aegean Islands, for example, and more importantly, the right to expand our border deep into the Muslim parts of southern Russia. And the threat implicit was that we will leave your ships to their fate in the Mediterranean if we don't get what we want. So hardly kind of cooperative spirit one would expect from new allies. And also, it's a slight deviation from the picture that one popularly gets of the German-Ottoman relationship, of German power and Ottoman dependency. Certainly in this case, it wasn't quite all like that. However, matters complicate themselves yet further on August the 5th. On that day, the Russian military attaché in Constantinople, General Major M.N. Leontiev, came to see Enver Pasha, the war minister for the Ottoman Empire. Enver Pasha had invited him there and said to him in no uncertain terms that a deal between the Ottoman Empire and Russia was possible. What he offered was this. He said, if, in return for Russia signing a 5 or 10 year defensive alliance with the Ottoman Empire and helping to broker a new Balkan settlement at the expense of Austria, which would involve Turkey getting Western Thrace from Bulgaria and some of the Aegean Islands from Greece, and Greece being compensated with Albania, and Bulgaria being given parts of Macedonia by Serbia, and Serbia then being given Bosnia-Herzegovina from Austria. If these things happened, Enver Pasha would promise to withdraw the 9th and the 11th Corps of the Ottoman Third Army from eastern Turkey. This would allow the Russians to move their troops away from this area, from the Caucasus, and send them to Europe, where they could be put to good use fighting Austria and Germany. In addition to this, the day this treaty was signed, the war minister would send the German military mission from Turkey back home and kick them out of the country. This was Germany's ally. This was Germany's supposedly loyal, steadfast friend in the southeast. And the haste in which Germany had made this alliance tends to suggest that perhaps due diligence hadn't really been fully done. How serious these discussions were will never be known, but they are essentially brought to a halt by the arrival of the Guben and the Breslau to Constantinople. When those ships finally make it through, and they are there to wage war against Russia in the Black Sea, there's no question of there being a Ottoman-Russian pact in the future. The Ottomans decide to quietly shelve any offer that they might have had with Russia in order to now allow the Germans to dock. So one does wonder what the point of the discussions with the Russians were in the first place, but it also suggests that the Ottomans were acting, in the case of Germany and Russia, in bad faith on both sides. Anyway, I hope you find this useful, and you can check out our new Patreon page. There's some long-form journalism there by me on the origins of 20th century China from and China's experience of the First World War. Do check it out, and if you can afford to contribute anything via Patreon, then that would be gratefully received, and all the details are within this podcast, the blurb below. Anyway, thanks very much, and I'll catch you again on the next Explaining History podcast. All the best, bye-bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.